One of my favorite pictures from the World War II era is of Jimmy Stewart with his right hand raised, standing with a group of ordinary young Americans, being sworn into the Army Air Corps. It was everyone's war, from the impoverished North Dakota farm kid to the pedigreed Ivy Leaguer, the Hollywood star, the sons of the rich and powerful. Theodore Roosevelt Jr. landed in Normandy on D-Day. FDR's boys were on duty in the South Pacific when their father died and they were unable to get home for the funeral. Jack Kennedy and his brother Joe were in uniform and in harm's way. Others we came to know later, George Bush, Richard Nixon, and Gerald Ford, all Navy officers, later presidents of the United States. Ben Bradley, the most celebrated newspaper editor of his time, was a young naval officer in the Pacific. Johnny Carson, the master of the television medium, looked like a skinny 12-year-old in his naval officer's uniform. Maurice Hank Greenberg ran away from home to join the Army, landed in Normandy on D-Day as a sergeant, and returned to New York to organize the most successful insurance empire in the world. Julia Child, America's favorite woman in the kitchen, was in the OSS. Byron Whizzer White, an All-America football player and Rhodes Scholar, was turned down by the Marines because he was colorblind, but he was accepted for the Naval Intelligence School. He met John Kennedy in the Pacific, and when Kennedy became president, White was his first appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court. The themes of war have long been the stuff of great literature, and once World War II ended, a new generation of American writers emerged. Some are still at work today. Norman Mailer, Kurt Vonnegut, William Styron, William Manchester, Paul Fussell, Shelby Foote, and Joseph Heller all served in uniform. World War II and the Civil War, so distinctly different in origin, locale, and time, were nonetheless the common denominators for the young Americans of their time, the defining experiences of the lives of millions of Americans, whatever their status before the first shots were fired. Later accomplishments, however grand or notorious, could not diminish the place of service in the war years. George Bush was a child of privilege when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. His father had accumulated a fortune on Wall Street, and he was a member of the U.S. Senate. Bush's mother presided over a large home in Greenwich, Connecticut, where she sent her children off to the best private schools and camps in chauffeured limousines, but when they returned home, she preached modesty and public responsibility. So it was only natural that on the day he turned 18, George Bush volunteered. He didn't wait for his draft number to be called. His father, the powerful Senator Prescott Bush, didn't attempt to arrange a safe job for his son in the War Department. George volunteered for a relatively new branch of the service, the Navy Air Corps. He wanted to be a combat pilot. By now, after all of his years in public life, his combat experience is well known. There's even a home movie of him being fished from the sea after his plane was shot down during a bombing run on a Japanese target. He rarely talks about his experience personally. He is much more likely to recite his mother's admonition, "Don't brag." When he was running for president, he was asked what he thought about as he drifted in hostile seas after being shot down, and he answered in that endearing but clumsy way of his, oh, you know, the usual things, duty, honor, God, country. As a political answer, it was a groaner. Nevertheless, it was probably very close to the essence of George Bush. For a man who spent so much of his life in the public arena, President Bush was curiously inarticulate about those defining moments. He was battle-scarred in a way the man he served, Ronald Reagan, was not, but next to Reagan, Bush always looked like the younger kid, wide-eyed with hero worship. Even when invited to expand on his thoughts about how World War II shaped him, President Bush is a reluctant witness. Yes, of course, he considers his years as a Navy combat flyer an important experience. He often thinks about the day that he was shot down, but when he does, he's more likely to think about the two buddies who were killed. Could he have done more to save them? When he returned home and plunged into a college education at Yale, sharing very crowded quarters with Barbara and other couples in a New Haven home, hastily converted to an apartment building, Bush didn't look back. He played varsity sports, got his degree, and headed west to the oil fields of Texas and the opportunity they presented. Did combat make him more willing to take those kinds of risks? I don't believe my combat experience was in any way responsible for my coming to Texas, he reflects now, adding, the Navy sent us all over, so a move away from a home base was not so traumatic. In that regard, George and Barbara Bush were like many young Americans in their post-war migration to other parts of the country. Kids from the Great Plains who joined the Navy, when they got out, they settled down hard by the sea in California. Young black veterans headed north to a good factory job in Detroit. World War II rearranged more than the political landscape of Europe and Asia. It was a major catalyst for shifting population patterns of the United States in the 50s and 60s. As for business, President Bush agrees that, yes, both military training and experience were helpful to all of us as we tackled various businesses. Maybe, just maybe, he concludes, having taken risks in the service, we were less concerned about taking risks in business. Overall, however, responding to questions about his youthful trials in combat, President Bush likes to invoke what was drummed into him at home even before he enlisted. Honor. As he says, it was a duty, yes, but truly an honor. He also feels strongly it is an obligation of citizenship that requires no additional reward. What are we owed, he asks. Nothing, not one damn thing. However, it is clear President Bush did gain something personally from the war that he would not have experienced if he had gone directly to Yale and then on to, say, a career in Wall Street, or even a political career from his home in Connecticut. He saw the other side of life through the eyes and most personal thoughts of his comrades from other classes back home. As an officer on a carrier, even though he was only 19 or 20 at the time, one of Lieutenant Bush's jobs was to read the mail of the enlisted men before it went out so no sensitive military information would be inadvertently compromised. As Bush recalls, as I did my duty and read the other guy's mail, I learned about life, about true love, about heartbreak, about fear and courage, about the diversity of our great country. The sailors would ask about the harvest or fishing or heat in the cities. Bush goes on, when I would see a man whose letter I had censored, I would look at him differently, look at him with more understanding. I gained an insight into the lives of my shipmates and I felt richer. As a young man at the controls of a Navy plane, flying off carrier decks, dropping torpedoes on enemy targets and getting back safely, Bush was a long way from those days of privilege in Greenwich, Connecticut. What he learned went well beyond his own involvement, however. He remembers standing on the carrier deck when another plane made a bad landing. As the pilot tried to take off again, the plane veered out of control, and its propeller cut a deckhand in half. As Bush stood there stunned, staring at a severed leg, a salty chief petty officer rallied the shocked sailors. God damn it, get back to work. Swab the deck, clear the deck, get ready for the next plane. More than 50 years later, that Navy chief stands out in the mind of President Bush as a man who, under great adversity, took charge, rallied the men, got the job done, did his duty. By his own admission, George Bush is not a reflective man. It may have to do with his mother's constant counsel not to draw attention to yourself. Work well done, and a life lived honorably, were reward enough. As a former congressman, ambassador to the United Nations, director of the Central Intelligence Agency, vice president, and then president of the United States, George Bush represents an unequaled record of public service within his generation. He believes he is owed nothing. In fact, he believes World War II was such an overwhelming threat that those who served had an obligation, that they should not expect special treatment forevermore. He believes some veterans organizations are wrong to keep asking for more and more benefits. As he says, serving in World War II was an honor, a privilege. I was a tiny part of something noble.